Welcome to Peace at Last, Memories of VE Day, a special two-part podcast marking 80 years since the end of the Second World War in Europe. I'm Donald Morrison, and in this podcast, I speak to women living in Parklands care homes across the north of Scotland who lived and served during the conflict. Their voices have been dimmed by age, but not their spirit. In this episode, we explore the more personal impact of war. These are the stories of women whose lives were shaped by separation, loss, and survival. Together, their stories reflect the many ways the war touched lives far from the front line. Growing up on a farm between Stonehaven and Montrose, Western View resident Margaret Simpson remembers wartime scarcities and her mother's creative solution to the sugar ration, keeping bees to make honey for jammy pieces.
Well, my father had a farm, and it was between Stonehaven and Montrose. And we were brought up there. I had three sisters and my only brother. And, well, we had to behave ourselves all the time. And my mother had a hard time of it, looking after a young family. And Dad worked hard, and mother always had a maid, because during the war we had Italian prisoners living beside Lawrence Kirk, and they came every day to work on the farm, and we all had our jobs to do. I went to the local school, Benham School, beside John's Haven, and until I was 12, I suppose, and then went to Montrose Academy, and then I went to a commercial college in Aberdeen. All that time, I was staying at home until I went to Aberdeen, when I went into lodgings.
And so when the war broke out, I think you would have been 14, roughly?
I suppose I was. I can remember the day it said, we're at war. I suppose that was the Prime Minister said that. And it made a big change, because there was such a scarcity of things. Being on a farm, we had an advantage. We had butter and eggs and milk. But we had to learn to milk cows when we were quite young. There's a scarcity of lots of things. And one of the things that was scarce was sugar. My mother decided to keep bees, because if you're a beekeeper, you can get a special allowance of sugar. And with the sugar, she could make jam. And with a young family, jammy pieces were always on the menu. So I would think jam was one of the things. I can remember the cupboard jam jar in the summer. The pan was always on the fire for making jam. I met Jim, my first husband, at a dance at Benham. Dances were few and far apart, but were the only enjoyment we had.
You were still quite young during the war, but did you follow the course of the war? Did you listen to the radio or look at the newspapers?
We didn't have a radio. These were something we never had at that point. And I suppose I wasn't interested really in the papers. Dad and mother always had their daily paper.
How did you keep your spirits up during the war?
We just had to. As I say, the dances were the only highlight of the season, as you say. And the boyfriends came from farms round about, and the girlfriends. And I met this chap, Jim, and it started from there. And I married in April 26th, I think it was, 1945.
So you got married the year the war ended?
Yes. And we had our first baby, February 1946, 11 months or something after. And then 18 months later, we had another daughter.
So do you remember when the war came to an end? Do you remember the feeling of jubilation?
Oh, everybody was pleased. I remember that. But I don't remember if there was a celebration. I think, from memory, we had a sort of picnic, a school picnic, to celebrate it.
And how did you feel when the war came to an end?
Oh, just like everybody else, just delighted.
Were you hopeful for the future at the time? Was it a time of positivity?
Oh, yes. We were newly married and stayed with my husband's father's farm in Arbuthnot, which was out of Stonehaven.
So this year, Margaret, is the 80th anniversary of the end of the war. Looking back, what do you think that future generations should learn from the war?
To be tolerant and respect elders.
Eleanor Rossall, who lives at Ellendu in Fortrose, was just 6 when her family was deported by Soviet troops from their Polish village to a Siberian camp. Her entire family was killed by the Soviets. Rescued by the Red Cross and sent to an orphanage in India, Helena eventually built a new life in Britain. Her daughter Liz Peck joins me.
My name's Helena Rossall, R-O-S-O-L.
Helena, I believe you were just 6 when the war broke out. Can you tell me more about your early family life?
I lived in a village in Poland, and there was 3 of us children, that is. And we were taken to Russia. The Russians came in the morning and got us out with nothing else but the clothes on, and all the way to Russia, to the camps there. And that's where I lost everybody, and as well as my father and my stepmother and the 2 little sisters. And I was in an orphanage, though. So I stayed there until the war ended, and then we were rescued, children, that is.
And I believe that you were taken from the camp to India.
Yes. Well, from Ashgabat to Persia, Iran, in 1942. Then was Mashhad, Polish camps, and then India, second of 42. It was a camp like another anywhere else, but of course the weather is completely different, and that makes all the difference. And we were by the sea as well, which was nice. And Maharaja used to come in his 12 wives. And that's about it until... And once the war ended, they actually got us all together, all the young people with who lost parents, and which I was one of them. And then I went through that all the way to India.
With the Red Cross, wasn't it?
Well, yes. And, well, from India, I had a choice. Either to go to America, be adopted, or come here to England. There was a, I don't know, some kind of committee or whatever who went to America and asked people to adopt us, children who had nobody else. And yes, a couple wanted to adopt me, and I was due to go there.
And I believe that you, on the route to America, came to England and you met your auntie in Cheltenham.
Uncle came and found you, didn't he? In the camp, in school. Well, do you remember?
Well, yes, but I mean, I didn't even know them. And they came and told me they were aunt and uncle. Yeah, and taken me out of there. And I lived with them. And, well, went to school and then, of course, out of it. And to work in the hotels and hospitals. And from there, well, normal, got married. And had two children. And moved to Didcot. And then, unfortunately, my husband became ill with lung cancer. And unfortunately, he died. And I became by myself again. And I've been on my own ever since. I have two girls. They look after me.
Helena, we're coming up to the 80th anniversary of the end of the war.
Oh, yes.
What do you think that future generations should learn from the experience that you went through and others like you?
Oh, maybe try and somehow manage to stop the war before it starts. Of course, look after each other and so on. And... well, the war never helped anybody, so, or anything.
During the war, Ellen Dhu resident Cathy Garrow worked in a farmhouse kitchen in Rosher. Life carried on much as it had always done, with hard work, community spirit, and the occasional dance. Soon to be 100, Cathy reflects on those years with her granddaughter, Arlene Hossett.
The war broke out, I think I'd still be in school.
You told me that you were working in a farm nearby. Can you tell me more about that work?
It was animals. I was living on it at the time.
And tell us more about the work that you were doing. What were you doing at the farm?
Cooking, feeding.
And then you got a couple of days off every week to go to dancing and that, did you?
They used to come at night and we used to go to Redcastle, and it was very, very busy with locals joined us all there for dancing. The farmers brought everything together, like the teacups and the food, And we all met then and had tea and fed, joining them.
You mentioned earlier that there were some soldiers in the area in Muiravord. Can you tell us more about
They were in Muiravord. That's where they were living. And they used to come to Redcastle to join the singing and the dancing when we had it.
Did you worry at all about the war?
I probably did at the time. I used to worry about the boys having to go away to war and then come back home.
So you were quite young when the war broke out. For you, you were having quite a lot of fun.
Aye, more or less. It didn't appeal to us that it was war on. We just
carried on
regardless.
We close with the memories of Margaret Radden from Uri House in Muiravord. At the start of the war, Margaret and her siblings were evacuated from Edinburgh to Inverness, a journey that felt more like a holiday than a hardship. She remembers the fun of fruit picking, the fear of gas attacks, and the celebration in Edinburgh when peace finally came.
I'm Margaret Radden, and I was born and brought up in Edinburgh, but now I'm happy to have made my home in the Highlands. Well, before the war began, we were living in Edinburgh, and my youngest, there were four of us, my oldest sister Bridie, who already had left school because she didn't want to go to the university, and she wanted to get a job, she wanted to earn money, and I was still in school, and so was my younger brother, and Mary wasn't quite born, so she was under the age, so my mother didn't have to go into munitions. She would have had no choice, but because she had my little sister not at school, they didn't put her into the services. So we would have all been kept safely in Edinburgh, but then somebody said, the Germans are going to try and get the Forth Road Bridge and break down any ways out and in of Scotland. And so they thought, maybe we should take the advantage of getting the children in the evacuation scheme. So we thought this was a big adventure and we weren't the least bit worried. So before the war actually started, which I think, if I remember correctly, was it the 2nd or the 3rd of September? But we were away by then, a whole week before. So we all had to register at the school and we were told what we'd have to take, but we were never told where we were going. The parents were told to get their children to the railway station at Pierce Hill.
And where did your parents go? Did they go with you or did they stay in Edinburgh?
Oh no, parents were to really evacuate their children because they had to carry on the work at home. They were able to take us to the station, Pierce Hill Station was our nearest one, and I think it must have been more or less three quarters of our school because I didn't miss anybody that wasn't there. Because they were being evacuated. All my friends were all being evacuated, so I thought this is fine. And so we weren't told where we were going until we saw it on the train carriages. And so we were allowed to get into any carriages, first class, anything we liked. And on we went, and we were quite interested. Some of us had never been on a train. And then the next thing was the blackout, and we had now been on the train not knowing where we were going, and our parents didn't have a clue, and we all had our gas masks in the little boxes, and then later on we got an extra big round disc thing to put on the bottom of it. This was an extra one for the gas that they were expecting us to be experiencing once the war got going, and that made us all feel very frightened.
This was an unseen enemy killer that all parents were dreading, that they couldn't do much about except get the mask out. But anyway, to continue our journey to Inverness, I had never been in Inverness before.
So you were quite young when war was declared?
Yes, I was just 9. And I was 10 when I was away.
And how did you feel when you first heard that war had broken out? Were you and your siblings frightened?
No, you know, we were boarded with the headmaster of the primary school, and he had just retired, and he gets landed to us to take evacuees. We didn't know. The war was on for a full week, and he didn't listen to his news at the usual time. He made sure that he took our mind off it. It was the apple picking time, and he had a beautiful orchard in his garden, and he kept us busy picking the apples and the pears and the plums. And we didn't have all these. We just had a couple of apple trees, but the pears and the plums we thought were just wonderful.
So were you evacuated from the outset, at the beginning?
That's right. It was started for a week. Because I remember when we got off the train, we wondered why all these soldiers were waiting on the platform with full battle kit, and not one of them let the cat out the bag and said, "We're going to war." They said, "Oh," he said, "we're like you. We're just going to have a lovely holiday. But we won't be beside the seaside," he kept telling us. "We'll be on the hills." And we thought that would be just as good, you know. We wanted a wee bit of everything. But they chatted away to us until our train came in and said, "Now remember, don't let your side down." And we said, we live in Edinburgh, and they were going, we don't know where, but they saw the name now, Inverness. So this is where we are. And they said, "Well, you're coming to a lovely city."
And so, Margaret, so how did it feel? You were in Inverness, and your siblings were in Inverness, and you were there with your school friends, but obviously removed from your mum and dad. How did that feel?
You know, it was just like we were going on holiday. We did know we were going to miss them, because we didn't know who we were going to be living with at that time. We thought, "Oh, I hope I'm going to get another person." It was my brother, I think, that was quite worried. He said, "I'm not going to have a proper daddy with me anymore." And I said, "Well, we don't know who the new people are. They must be kind if they're offered to take children." And he said, "Yes, that's true." He was only 7, but he quite understood it. But I think he was the one that was going to miss his daddy more than us.
When you got on the train in Edinburgh, not knowing where you were going, did you have any sense of how long you'd be away for?
No, no idea at all. And nobody seemed to be worried about it. We were more worried who we were going to live with. So we got there and had our food, got off the train, and then these lovely people came, and they'd already allocated them to who they said how many they would take. So everybody got to where they were. And we were going to Crown Circle, and number 7, and with this lovely big orchard. After we were there for a few weeks, we thought, maybe when we get home, we'll tell Mummy, "No apple puddings for a wee while, Mum." This was standing out in my mind.
But and how did you keep in touch with your mum and dad?
Just by the letters. No phone. They could make a phone if it was something urgent, but I didn't want to be running up Mr. Bray's phone bill. And there was no such things as mobile phones then. This is what you forget. It was a long time ago now.
How long were you evacuated in Inverness for?
Mum had us home for Christmas.
The same year? The same year, 1939?
That's right.
The same year war was declared.
Because Dad said, "I'm not looking forward to Christmas if the bairns, as he called them, are not going to be here." And Mum said, "Well, it's funny you're thinking that way." They had been allowed a bus trip that the school organised to take them up. I think it would be maybe the end of October, at the October break, which used to be the tatty holiday weekend. and they got that holiday still in Edinburgh. So they put buses on to take any of the parents that wanted to visit them while they were still with the people that took them in.
When did you move back to Edinburgh permanently? At what point did your evacuation end for you?
It wasn't until the end of October, because Bridie, for some reason, wanted to be home for her birthday, and her birthday was Armistice Day, the 11th of November. 11/11/26 was her. And once you've sown the seed that they can get home, there's an anxiousness for it to happen. But we visited some of our friends still down by the riverside. That was our playing place when we weren't in the garden. We loved the islands on the river, and all our friends did the same. And so we all unofficially met up there, and we thought these islands were... Oh, I think the young one, Mary, she was sure that the fairies were there. It was such a lovely island.
So did you spend most of the war in Edinburgh itself, rather than Inverness?
Yeah, oh yes, after that we were in Edinburgh.
So you were only evacuated for a short time?
That's right, back by Christmas.
So how did you follow the progress of the war? Did you read about it in the newspapers? Did you watch it on Pathé News? Did you keep in touch with what was going on in the world?
No, we were encouraged to read the papers. My parents always liked The Scotsman, and Mum, what was the one she liked? She liked a different newspaper. It was one that had more the famous people. You were getting all the things they were up to. And they always had all the pictures, more pictures in that one. And Mum liked to see what all these famous people were up to. But so we always read her paper, because with us still being fairly young children, we wanted to see these lovely pictures.
Do you remember hearing the news that the war was over, and how did you feel when you heard that?
Great. We just wanted to run out in the street and hug everybody that was passing by. And so we made straight for the gardens, and the band was there already, and the place was packed. And so the dancing started. So everybody was running up, giving everybody else a hug if you'd ever seen them, and especially the fellows that were still in their uniforms, and especially the older women, obviously hoping that their sons were still going to appear, and they would go up to them, "Oh, thank God you're home, son." And they never saw the lad in their life before, but it was so nice. They just really were pleased to see that this particular boy got home quickly. I wish they could be friendly like that all the time in the world, but that was one example that they didn't care who it was. They just had to go up and let them know that they were pleased that we were all alive. And they were grateful when they saw us coming on to do our dancing display. And honestly, they had to get the police to stop them coming on to the stage, because the band had a time that they had to finish. They were waiting for something to go maybe through to Glasgow to do the same there. So they were trying to fit in as much things as they had. But oh, it was good fun. And the packets of chewing gum that we got from the Americans, that's what the children, they had to get the chewing gum. They weren't caring for the fancy chocolate. The older girls, like my big sister, they were very lucky. They always had packets of the new nylons that they couldn't give to their own girlfriend. They were getting them in America themselves. But they would give them to any female they saw. Even my mother got a pair of nylon. She always blamed them for getting chilblains on the calf of her legs when she stopped wearing the real silk stocking. And we keep teasing Mum, "Well, you never told me you're friendly with one of the Yanks." She said it wasn't like that at all. She used to get quite cross.
How did you first hear the news that the war was over?
I think my parents would say to us to stay in and listen to what was happening on the radio all together. And thank God we were all alive. I was the only one in my class that didn't lose a close relative. A big brother hadn't gone and not come back. And Dad, was too old to be in the first call-up range. And so he was left to do his special science stuff that he was doing.
Looking back, how do you think we got through it all?
I think people had a strong faith in those days, and they really thought God would maybe be able to prevail.
Looking back at the war, this year marks the 80th anniversary of the end of the war. What do you think future generations should learn from the war?
Not to make the same mistakes again.